He was physically attractive, but not in the typical way. He had a softness, a vulnerability radiating out from him that was magnetic, that she could feel from where she stood. Certain features were obviously appealing. The unruly ink-black hair, his eyes a deep chocolate, the look inside them warm and wistful, gently welcoming you in. The right lid had a tiny scar above it, as did his lips, well-drawn and generous. He wore a black polo buttoned to the top that made him look sweetly masculine. As she was studying him, his gaze landed on her. He leapt up and greeted her with a tight embrace. Oriana was taken aback by his overheated body next to hers. He felt lean and muscular, like the soccer players she'd glimpsed on TV, and she wondered how he'd managed to stay fit in solitary confinement. "I'm glad you came," he said. "Thank you." His voice pricked up the hair on her neck. It had a deep, persuasive quality, rich and resonant, that got under her skin, that arrived inside her like a coaxing. She pulled away, but Alekos clasped her shoulders, squeezing her 5'1" frame as if he would lift her. "For you." He grabbed a bouquet of red roses, limp and past their prime, off the table. "Grazie," she said, getting caught in his eyes. The well-wishers on the veranda were boring holes in her skin, and her stomach was queasy, not from the plane ride or winding coastal road. She'd managed those just fine. The world leaders she'd interviewed had offered her coffee, drinks, cigarettes. Nobody had ever given her flowers. "Is there somewhere we can work?" She scanned the packed veranda. "I leave tomorrow." Not hesitating, Alekos took her hand and led her into the house with an inborn courtliness. He moved with smooth assurance, accustomed, she saw right away, to taking control. There was an unmistakable current between their palms, and she had just managed to avoid any vision of a wild embrace when he steered her into a dim room dominated by a full bed. Oriana averted her eyes from the ivory matelassé spread, but he found them. "My mother's room is the quietest," he said. His voice slipped past her defenses. A bedroom voice, that's what it was. A man who knew how to approach women, unaggressive, his charisma drawing you in. She glanced away to the icons of Mary and Jesus on the corner shelf, the burning frankincense that could choke an ox, the crocheted doilies draped over every inch of bureau and nightstand. "Sit." He pulled a straw-bottomed wooden chair to the nightstand. Oriana tucked her dress under her thighs, but the straw pinched her bare legs. Why had she worn a dress? She always wore pants. In fact, she'd bought the gauzy white dress with tiny violets yesterday at Laura Biagiotti, where she was a regular since the interviews put real money in her pocket. Alekos' trousers were deeply wrinkled, she noticed, his shoes scuffed and unpolished. He settled on the edge of his mother's bed across from her, his shoulder grazing the tacky formica headboard. The look in his eyes was hopeful, expectant, but his cheeks remained sunken, his mouth downturned. "You don't seem to be enjoying your party," she said. "Why, Alekos?" "We still have a dictatorship. Nothing's changed," he said. "Don't be surprised if they barge in and arrest me again." Her hand froze in the middle of setting up her recorder. It was the kind of personal question she started with, to catch her subjects off guard, but it hadn't worked. She was caught off guard herself. Focus, she thought, lighting a cigarette. She had interviewed Gaddafi, for Christ's sake. Who was this Alexander Panagoulis to rattle her? Some idealistic young gun who'd messed up his assassination attempt on Greece's dictator. He wasn't the dictator himself. She smoothed her dress, woven of barely there cotton for summer in the Mediterranean, and gathered her hair to one shoulder. It was cool in his mother's bedroom, thanks to marble floors and sealed shutters, but she felt herself heating up.